Welcome to the first episode of the Big Deep Podcast. My name is Mike, and I'm a lot of things. We're going to find out what all those things are, but first I'm going to kind of give you an overview of where I'm at. So essentially, I've been sober just shy of 5 months. Back in February, Super Bowl Sunday, I've been hiding alcohol for years. Consequences like you wouldn't believe, some of which I'm still dealing with today. However, in January, I lost my job, a job that I loved, I was good at. As a functioning alcoholic, I could just do it until I couldn't. And that's why I found myself unemployed. I wanted to do a downward spiral. I doubled down on my drinking and ended up lying to everybody for a long period of time that I wasn't drinking. And on Super Bowl Sunday, I'd been drinking all day, of course. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit, but my son found 3 bottles of vodka that I had hidden, and my wife basically said, that's it. Either you get help for what I've been asking you to get help, and quit the lying, and all the shit, or we're done. So that evening, I had to continue to maintain drinking. I was drinking 24 hours a day for many years, going into withdrawals throughout the course of the day if I hadn't been drinking. You know, they say that Winston Churchill was no alcoholic because no alcoholic could drink like Winston Churchill. I was that alcoholic. I could function. I could do things until at the end. Again, I couldn't. So Super Bowl Sunday, here we go. I got back for picking my son up. Yes, I drove drunk. Did that a million times. And nobody was talking to me. I knew something was wrong. It was about halftime. I proceeded to deflect. It's not mine. Oh, that's been there forever. The normal stuff that an alcoholic does. And the long and short of it is at some point, the first little bit of me said, you know what, I gotta get help, and I have to do it for these people around me. And what transpired is overnight, my wife worked on, I believe it was a Monday morning, obviously Super Bowl Sunday, it was Monday morning. I called my mom. I had drank all morning to able to get me to the emergency room. Went to the emergency room at approximately 9 o'clock in the morning. Sitting in there, and the ER doctor, I told him I was an alcoholic, I was going to go through bad withdrawals, potentially life-threatening withdrawals. I knew enough about it to know that I could die. Long and short of it is that, you know, they did lab work and all kinds of stuff, and my blood alcohol came back at 0.39. And he says, well, you're just drunk. And I said, wait for it. And the wait for it was about 9 days of detox in the hospital. Horrific. I don't remember 2-3 days of it. I was on various drugs to keep me kind of going. And as I slowly got out of it, it wasn't the first time that I detoxed. Ironically enough, I just kept drinking after. I started going in my head. I started thinking to myself, man, what am I going to do to get out of this situation? To make it seem like I'm not drinking, but to go back to drinking. And I remember maybe the second, third day having that. And then I started seeing things that weren't there. I was sick. I was sweating. And it was a lot more serious than I thought. A lot of people detox. 8 or 9 days is a long, long detox. And it was scary. And it was the most painful thing you could ever go through. And as a chronic alcoholic, being a chronic alcoholic is painful. But people actually die from detox. And that's one of the things that people really don't understand. Is there's, you know, the withdrawal from alcohol can kill you. And it about killed me. Right. So fast forward just a hair. My wife started looking for in residential inpatient treatment places. And alcoholic mind's going, man, I got to figure out a way to get out of this, prevent this. And I said, well, okay, I'm going to go, you know, Monday. And she found a spot about 45 miles from, 50 miles from where we live. I said, well, I just need to go home and get some stuff. And she said, no. And I was like, okay. And she said, we're going to have a car come, and they're going to take you right to to residential treatment. And I remember sitting there trying to figure out, how am I going to get out of this? And then something happened. The gentleman from University of Wisconsin addiction specialties came in and had a conversation with me. And the conversation went something like this. You're going to die. And not just a little bit. You're going to die horribly. And you're going to die very soon. I had had health problems for the past couple years. I needed my gallbladder taken out. I had two strokes. I had a multiple mental breakdowns. I was suicidal. And it really, really, really never dawned on me that that's where I was. Because I thought, maybe this is all normal, right? So he's telling me, you're going to die. I mean, he wasn't a doctor. He was an addiction specialist. And he told me, you're going to die. And people tell you that. And you scroll and you're looking at reels. And they're like, oh, you could die. You know, oh, but it doesn't really hit you. And so I said goodbye to my wife and kids and got into a cab. And as I'm in the cab, you know, the cab driver says, oh, you're going to Wellbrook Recovery. And I said, yeah, yeah, I'm on my way there. And he said, I've been sober 5 years. And what was amazing about this interaction with this guy was he wasn't lecturing me. He honestly was trying to get me there to the next step, right? He was trying to get me there. He cared. And here's someone who was an addict, an alcoholic, done horrible things just as I, and I've done some of the most reprehensible things on the planet, and some of which I'm still going to be dealing with the consequences of. But at some point, I had to accept that it's over, that the party's over, the gig is up. And as I'm pulling in to the inpatient treatment, the guy says to me, not a strip mall, but kind of like a, you know, lots of cinder block outside, real not like warm welcoming. And I'll never forget it. The guy goes, oh, geez. He goes, this looks like a treatment facility. And I thought to myself, oh, this doesn't look too fun. I walked into this treatment facility. Hardest thing I've ever done. You know, they say that, you know, it's a very courageous thing to do. It's not. The work you got to put into the courage, and you have to understand that this is, it's over. And if you don't get help, you're rock bottom, which is already rock bottom. Mine was at the absolute toilet, and we'll get to all that. And I got, you know, health issues. I got cirrhosis. I have major things that I got to address and deal with. And, so I meet the clinician, the nurse, and they basically take you into a room. And these people come in and they take all your stuff. Okay. You don't get anything back. You don't get a razor back. You don't get shaving gel. You don't get anything with alcohol. Right? And me, because of the time of day that I went in there, I had no orientation. And basically, I got put into a private room, and I sat there. I'll never forget it. I hadn't shaved in about 10 days. And there's an intake photo of me at the recovery center. And it is one of the most poignant pictures, and I'm going to share it here in the next couple episodes, of rock bottom. But it wasn't the picture that was being put in that room. I broke down. I cried. And the thoughts of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get treatment, wasn't that. Swear to God, the thing I was thinking was, I am 45 years old and I'm never going to drink again the rest of my life. Oh, there's got to be a way. I mean, you know, maybe I just need a little education or moderation or something along those lines. And then as I'm sitting there, I'm crying, I'm bawling, I'm a mess. I mean, just a puddle of shit. My family hates me. Community hates me. Everybody I've wronged in my life hates me. But I hated myself 10 times more than anybody else could ever hate me. And I sat there and I cried. And then I took a shower. I didn't shave. And I walked around. Nobody even showed me around, you know, because the text, they kind of let you sit, you know. And to kind of, it's like a shocking capture, right? I mean, it's like the first day getting off the boot camp at the Marine Corps depot. And I was like, oh my God. Well, so I go into this room and there's a wide variety of people there. There's men, women, younger, older, any age from 22 to 60. And they were playing a game, and I'd never heard of it. It's called Farkle. It's a dice game. And they invited me to play. And I was like, oh, I'll sit in here, but I'm not going to play. And one of the guys said, no, man, why don't you play? And I played. And there was a moment where I thought, when I first walked in that room, I shouldn't be here. I'm better than all these people. To the understanding that these are my people. These people are just like me. And the people that I've met so far in recovery and at AA meetings and all this is, are from all walks of life. Addiction, alcoholism does not discriminate. Doesn't discriminate by gender, by sex, by opportunity. I know people that myself included had every advantage growing up. And they blew time and time and time and time again. And I knew people that came from nothing in recovery. I knew people that were traumatically hurt as children, sexually, mentally. I met veterans. I met all kinds of people. And the one thing that came to fruition is the understanding that nobody wanted that as their outcome. No matter how happy you can be, nobody wakes up as a 12-year-old kid and says, you know, when I grow up, when I'm 45, I want to be an alcoholic who's wronged everybody in the world. That's what I want to do. I mean, it's not like Willy Wonka. You didn't open the candy bar and you got this golden ticket of, oh man, get on the bus, you're drunk. No, you work at it. And so my residential inpatient, a lot of times people are like, oh man, it's going to get so much better. It got harder. The strain at home with my wife and my kids was astronomical. I was fighting with my wife via the phone. And it was still this alcoholic mentality that I had. And some of which I carry today of hatred, resentment. And again, it took a long time for me to understand that all of that stems from the hatred and resentment that I have towards myself. 40 days in rehab and got out of rehab. Right? Had a plan to start a IOP program. And we're going to talk about what all these things are. And I've been doing that. I've been attending AA meetings, all that kind of stuff. But I've started this podcast to bring people from the recovery industry to addicts, to alcoholics, to family members affected. Because right now, I know for a fact that you're going to see part of this video and it's going to be a reel, right? and you're going to be scrolling through Facebook, and it's going to be me saying, your opportunity is nobody else's. It's just yours. And you're the one who has to make that choice. Nobody else can make it for you. I used to sit there and look at these things, and what I realized was, and this is when I was lying, I said I was sober, all this crap. I'd look at these videos of Dennis Quaid and you know, drinking is fun, then it becomes fun with problems, then it becomes just problems, or Ben Affleck, or any of these people. None of those people are going to get you to quit drinking. None of those people are going to give you the courage to walk into a place. Nobody does that. You don't. It's not a referral program. The only referral program that you need is here. It's internal. And when it is over, you have choices. I mean, I knew people that were plotting their next drink in rehab. I know people that weren't. They were on their second, third, fourth time even. I saw young people, old people. I saw people that were sick. Somewhere along the way, I found out how sick I was. When I was in the hospital, my liver was 71%. Over its regular size. It was pushing up against my lung. Several weeks before I went into rehab, I did a PEETH test, which basically checks the amount of ethanol in your body. And it was a gotcha moment the week before I went into rehab that I knew that medically I was in a really bad way. And essentially, I had been saying, oh, I'm not drinking, you know, my liver's bad, I got all this pain, all this kind of stuff. This PEETH test, a chronic alcoholic is over 300. Mine was 1,346. And I got a message from that provider basically saying, if you're not going to abstain from alcohol, there's no reason for you to go to a hepatologist. This was a week before I went in. I was like, oh, screw you. Well, anyway, I started, when I detoxed and went through residential, I started noticing things that happened. Number one, I became itchy everywhere. My skin molted. It literally peeled off because of the shock to the system of alcohol and not. I started thinking a little bit clearer. But it still wasn't good. So where am I now? Why am I starting a podcast? And why is the podcast called The Big Detox? Well, my kid, Graham, I have twin boys, and he basically calls me Big D, you know, for Big Dad, I think. But he always goes, Big D! And, you know, I was talking to my family, and I'm like, you know, I'm pretty passionate about recovery and trying to figure out what I'm doing, what I'm going to do going forward, how am I going to exist, how am I going to interact with people, all these sorts of things that, you know, this podcast I'm creating is one for the community of addiction. It's not just for people in recovery, because we're going to talk to people in recovery, but we're also going to be talking to the people who are sitting there looking at those reels and say, man, I could probably get help. I'll do it tomorrow. It is a very, very short period of time that you have to make that choice, because when you hit the amount of health issues, legal issues, all kinds of stuff, at some point you have to make that choice. The types of people we're going to have in the recovery industry are going to be therapists. They're going to be case managers. They're going to be techs from rehab facilities on their experience, what they see works, what their feelings are. We're going to have family members. My family members are going to be on this podcast to talk about, you know, the struggle that it was. And I'm nowhere near perfect at this point. Trying to guide my way through this. And my hope and dream And thought process here is that we're going to build a community. And the community's going to be about everything addiction. It's going to be about everything mental health. And it's going to be, what can we do to break the chains? And once those chains are broken, what we can continue to do to grow new ones. I never thought that 6 months ago I'd be even remotely interested in A, quitting drinking, B, doing a podcast about it, about my life. Because you're going to see the absolute biggest mess you could ever imagine, right? And you have to understand that no matter how bad you think it is, there's someone else out there. And the fact of the matter is, there are millions of Americans out there with alcohol, mental health issues, right? They do crazy stuff. They cheat, they lie, they steal. But it's reality. And, you know, we're going to change, attempt to change how people individually think. And if we can do that for a small group of people, if we can help one person to say, you know what, God, you know, I heard the podcast and how do I get help? Right? Our website, bigd-talks.com. Send me an email, mike@bigdtalkspodcast.com, and start a conversation. We're going to try to address everything that we can address, right? We're going to have links to places you can get help, how to navigate insurance, how to, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm scared to talk to my employer. Well, I was in HR management for years. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk to business people. We're going to talk to those on the front lines of addiction to help everybody that we can. Like our page on Facebook, subscribe to the show on YouTube. My son's helping me set it up. My content creator, Dustin. I'm new to the podcast game, so any suggestions that you may have, I would greatly appreciate it, you know, because I'm, like I said, I'm still navigating and I'm not perfect. So join us. We're going to drop another episode here this week. Join us to continue the conversation. In the next episode, I'm basically going to talk about the experience that was breaking down and making the decision to get help. And I didn't do it alone. I mean, if it wasn't for my wife, I'd be dead, without a doubt. And we're going to talk about that decision process, what that looks like, right? It's a wake of shit, basically. You're going down the thing. There's going to be a wake of a mess when you stop. And it can cost you a lot. So that's going to be on our next episode. I'm hoping to get it dropped this week. Going from there, we're going to start talking about, you know, recovery. What are the different things? You know, things work for different people, right? Is it AA? Is it smart recovery? Is it Dharma? Is it white knuckle? Is it, you know, I got thrown in jail. I got thrown in jail, you know, but that I still drank for months after that. What does that decision look like? How do you make it? And then how do you embrace the challenges of the next step? So I look forward very much to continuing the conversation. I want everyone to do something for their sobriety today. I've been told that a lot. If you do something for your sobriety every day, you're going to be in a good spot. And that may not be going to an AA meeting. That might not be, you know, whatever the case may be. It may be going for a walk. It may be going to your son's game. It may be doing something sober that you've never really enjoyed because you were always drunk. So it's going to drop in the next week. Please subscribe to our show on YouTube. We're going to have it. We're going to have this episode up very shortly. And any ideas for content, anything like that, please reach out. It's mike@thebigd-talks.com. I want everybody to have a great day and be freaking nice, because everybody is dancing with the devil that you cannot see or understand.